Welcome to Local Motion. I'm Corey Stanton, and on this program, we're going to be discussing dark skies. I'll be speaking with several dark sky community leaders from different areas on the western slope of Colorado. We'll talk about what it takes for a community or an area to be granted dark sky designation from the International Dark Sky Association, which according to their website is the recognized authority on light pollution and is the leading organization of fighting light pollution worldwide. In 1988, the International Dark Sky Association, also known as IDA, was founded, and its purpose is still dedicated to protecting the night skies for present and future generations. IDA has four main goals: advocate for the protection of the night sky, educate the public and policymakers about night sky conservation, to promote environmentally responsible outdoor lighting, and to empower the public with the tools and resources to help bring back the night. I'd like to encourage anyone who's interested in learning more to visit darksky.org. You're tuned in to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. The hot topic in this story is light pollution and how it affects not only our night skies, but also our health, safety, and even wildlife. Before we dive into the effects of light pollution, we'll first hear from Bob Grossman and Woody Creighton from Norwood, Colorado. The town of Norwood recently added their community to the dark sky designation list. Now we'll hear from Bob Grossman and Woody Creighton about how they got involved in the Dark Sky Norwood initiative.
I looked up the International Dark Sky Association and emailed John Barentine and said, what does it take to become a dark sky community designation? And he says, you're from Norwood. Do you know Gretchen Wells? And I said, yes, I do. She's a town clerk. He said she had just gotten in touch with me about the same topic yesterday. So Gretchen and I independently had queried the International Dark Sky Association for the process within a day of one another. And that began our process. That was in March of 2015.
Wow.
That's when we began. I was looking for help, and Gretchen had mentioned that there was a amateur astronomer in town who I'd known before, and that was Creighton Wood, Woody Wood. And we got together and formed a little group and began the process really seriously in the summer of 2015.
And then you just received your dark sky certification in February of 2019.
That's correct. It was a long process, and Woody can go through that. But before we do that, we should probably give you some idea of where this whole effort came from. It was inspired, the way I understand it, from the astronomical community. As the lighting, especially in the United States, was getting more and more intense, especially these sodium vapor lights, it turns out that their light frequency lies right in a spectrum that astronomers are interested in when they query the atmospheres and various properties of stars. And so they formed this International Dark Sky Association to help reduce that amount of light pollution. And they also noticed from satellite pictures, clear sky pictures of the Earth that began around 1970 or the middle 70s, and you can watch this amoeba-like explosion of lighting across the civilized world. And that was very concerning to them. So they have been reaching out to communities across the world to reduce light pollution. And that is their main objective. Of course, the spinoff for astronomy and for just general enjoyment is very, very important.
What does qualify a town or an area to become dark sky certified?
A dark sky community is designated certainly after they apply, and as part of the application process, the people doing the application have to do three separate things. They have to prove that we have dark skies already, although that's becoming less important now. And as part of that, we had already started a program where we use instruments called a sky quality meter to go out and check, and it's like a light meter for a camera, but it's a dark meter.
Okay.
It literally measures how dark it is outside, and the numbers range up to the maximum of 22.0, which is like hiding in a closet at midnight in the wintertime.
Well, actually, it's a minus in front of theirs.
Technically, it's a minus. That's right. But the measurements around here were really outstanding. It's a minus 21.7 in our region as an average. That is extremely dark, even by dark sky standards. The next part of the process is to prove and or change the local ordinances dealing with outdoor lighting in the area.
The first thing you do, you go to the International Dark Sky website, and they have very strict rules. They have what they call the Model Lighting Ordinance. It's interesting to look at that just generally because it is broken down by the size of the community that they are making these requirements for. And so we had to then go back to our lighting ordinance and tailor that lighting ordinance to these requirements. It involved redoing the definitions of different kinds of lighting, looking at holiday lighting, looking at signage, looking at street lights. And in fact, we have an outstanding requirement that our Grand Avenue, which is our main street and also a state highway, has proper shading, but IDA wanted a color change to that light. Color of the lighting has to do with what you probably know about warm and cool, different colors of lights that you see in the store now. And for instance, the higher the temperature, which they measure in kelvins, another definition we had to produce in the ordinance, our Grand Avenue lighting is 4,000 Kelvin. Well, IDA wants 3,000 Kelvin. So we have to go through the process of changing the color of those lights. That's the kind of stuff that we had to deal with as we went through this ordinance. And we were fortunate enough to have a volunteer helping us that is a professional lighting engineer. She works up in Telluride, but she worked with us extensively and with the town and with our land use code. The lighting expert that Woody had mentioned was Katie Sapp. She's a resident of Norwood, working out of Telluride. And she teamed up with Cindy Chapin, who was the planning and zoning consultant to the town of Norwood. And with them and us, Woody and myself, we were able to shepherd changes to the land use code that were accepted by the International Dark Sky Association. It took a couple of back and forths between us to designate us as a small rural town, because International Dark Sky has very stringent requirements for these ordinances. And so it took a couple of rounds before we could get it approved by both the town board and the International Dark Sky Association. And that happened in late 2018.
Did you have any pushback from the town?
No. And in fact, you bring up the third part of the designation, and that is showing that you have support in the town. And we did that primarily with letters of support. I think we had 125 letters of support for our process. Nobody ever said anything bad about the concept. Nobody argued about it. We were expecting problems because the first town designated dark sky community in Colorado, the West Cliff Silver Cliff town, remarked that they got a lot of pushback from some of the old timers, especially those, shall we just say, the more conservative types. And basically they're saying, you're not going to tell us what to do. Mm. But we found, even though we have quite a few of the old ranchers and centennial ranches around, that we got no pushback whatsoever. In fact, we got nothing but encouragement.
Mm. Our message to them is, and it is the message that we continue to promote, is that we aren't trying to turn your lights out. We're just trying to help you use them smarter. We want that light to go down where it belongs so that you can see what's on the ground and not up and sideways. That is the basic push for the International Dark Sky Association, if you could say it in that few words. Down, not up or sideways. So that just means that your light just should have a proper shade on it. That's it. And actually, if you go to a place like Home Depot or a hardware store like Ace, you will find shades for exterior lights that have the IDA, International Dark Sky Association, seal of approval on them. That we encourage people to get those kinds of lights. In our own community, We have support from the Loan Kong Legacy Trust group, and we would provide some modest grants or interest-free loans to people who could not afford to buy a light shade for their light that might be light polluting. So we have a lot of community support and tremendous support from the town.
That was Bob Grossman and Woody Creighton from the town of Norwood, Colorado, sharing their experience achieving dark sky designation for Norwood. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. On this program, we're talking about dark skies and how cities and communities can apply for dark sky designation through the International Dark Sky Association. Next, we'll hear from Ridgeway resident and dark sky community leader Val Schwark. For the last 2 years, Ridgeway has been working on meeting the criteria required by the International Dark Sky Association, and they hope to submit their application in January 2020. If approved, Ridgeway is hopeful for a dark sky designation sometime in the spring of 2020. Val is leading this effort in Ridgeway and was able to bring some of his experience as he was also involved in helping the town of Norwood achieve dark sky designation. I asked Val if he had any thoughts on the western slope of Colorado achieving regional dark sky designation.
Yeah, that is something that we're all working together on, is to try to make as much of the local towns in southwestern Colorado have them being dark sky designated. And so, and actually there's been some talk of working with the Forest Service in the Norwood area, with parts of the forest being designated as a dark sky sanctuary. And actually closer here to Ridgeway, I've been in touch with Top of the Pines, a Ouray County recreation area. It's a 175-acre park that they have grooms, cross-country skiing in the wintertime, and in the summertime, it's mountain biking, hiking, and some special events on the facilities. And they actually just passed a motion to pursue a dark sky park or a dark sky sanctuary as well. So we're moving along to try to preserve as much of the dark sky as we can in southwestern Colorado, because we are actually indeed blessed with opportunities to see that dark starry sky, see the Milky Way. As we even step right out of our houses, we could see that with not even dark adapted eyes, unlike, say, the Front Range around Denver or Boulder, is that you're lucky to see a dozen or two stars, say, in downtown Denver. Actually, the other benefit that Ridgeway Town Council, we all have talked about in meetings, is that not only will Ridgeway be preserving the dark sky above the town and the surrounding areas, they will actually be lowering their carbon footprint by managing the amount of light that they have on homes and businesses. And so that's another important thing, that we'll be lowering our carbon footprint and minimizing our impact to the global warming, which is another important and serious challenge facing the world.
I'm just curious, do you think that a city like Montrose could ever become a dark sky, or Grand Junction? Is it too far past the point, or are there things that could be done to accomplish dark sky designation in a larger city?
It can be done. Actually, a much larger town, Tucson, Arizona, did it just recently. In the last few years, they changed all the main street lights to a lower color temperature LED. I believe it's 3,000 degrees Kelvin LEDs, and had the light fixtures properly shielded, so all the light is shining downward. So it can be done. The larger the town is, the larger effort you usually need to do that, and you need to work with the town governance.
We just heard from Ridgeway resident and dark sky community leader Val Schwark. You're listening to Local Motion here on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton, and we're talking about light pollution and how cities and areas can achieve dark sky designation through the International Dark Sky Association. Now we'll hear from Paonia resident and dark sky Paonia community leader Aaron Watson. Here's Aaron with a Dark Skies Paonia update.
We've been working with the town of Paonia and DMEA to build a streetlight demonstration. And so we had this demonstration set up where we had a dark sky friendly 3000 Kelvin light versus the standard 4000 Kelvin light that DMEA is currently using. We had over 70 responses from this demonstration from local community people, and we brought the results to the town council meeting on December 10th. And while we were there, some residents also gave some feedback that people who lived right below those lights said that even the 3,000 Kelvin ones were too bright for them. And so they asked that we look into lowering the Kelvin to 2,700 Kelvin and looking at lights with a dimmable option as well. Town Council took that feedback and they asked for more information. So now we've gone back to DMEA and we're asking them to look into a lower Kelvin light for us. So really it's a good thing, I think, for dark skies that before it was like dark skies versus not dark skies we were looking at. But now there's different levels of dark skies that the town is looking at. So people are getting educated as to what's going on and wanting an even better option, which I think is great. We found another company that offers a 2,700 Kelvin dimmable option, and we've alerted DMEA that they exist and given them the information. And so now we're just waiting to hear back.
And this dimmable option, is it something that you could set it on a timer?
Yeah, exactly. You can set it on a timer. And so at a certain time of night, it could dim down. Or if it was in a certain area that it just wanted to be dim all the time, it could be that. But it would give DMEA full control as to when to dim that.
Hmm. And in the comments you received, did you get any feedback that was concerning, or were there any concerns about safety?
Not that I saw, no. Most people were in favor of the dark skies and, you know, they were coming to our website. So maybe they were supporters and, you know, there was some more feedback that the town got, but all 70 were in support of the 3,000 Kelvin lights.
That was Peony resident and Dark Skies community leader Aaron Watson. Next, we'll hear from Virginia Harmon, who is the chief operating officer at DMEA. I asked Virginia what the process has been like working with the town of Peonia and Dark Skies Peonia as they seek dark sky designation.
Peonia is actually the first town that's come to DMEA seeking dark sky designation. We have had in the past communities come to us and talk to us about their desire to use less energy and therefore wanting to make the switch to LEDs. So all of the projects we've done over the past few years with communities specifically regarding streetlights have been focused on the energy efficiency aspect, going to LEDs in order to use less electricity. Peonia is the first to come to us looking for not only to make the switch to LEDs, but while doing that, to try to make some efforts towards the Dark Sky Initiative.
I know that Peonia is kind of in the beginning stages collecting comments from the community. And so what's the update on your end with DMEA?
DMEA, we have been working with, like I said, our communities for a number of years trying to make the switch over to LEDs. Peonia and the city of Montrose are the only two who haven't made that full switch yet. And the town of Peonia has looked at it a few times. And recently they came to us saying, I think we're ready to make the switch to LED. And in the meantime, we've been working with this Dark Skies group. And so we would like to see, you know, some of the different options available with LEDs. And so we've brought them a couple of different options that worked with the Dark Skies group to come up with some options that we think will meet their requirements in order to get that status. And basically what it looks like, from my perspective, which I'm not a dark skies expert, but from what I've been told by the group here, is we have to look at a change in the lumens or a change in the temperature, so the Kelvins of the lights, what we install across the board for all LEDs in our entire service territory, or 4,000 Kelvin lights. And what I understand from Dark Skies is it has to be lower, close to the 3,000 in order to qualify. And ultimately, it's going to be up to the town to decide, you know, what they want to do. But we have told them that we'd be willing to do a deviation from our standard 4,000 Kelvin to go down to a lower Kelvin that would help them meet the criteria that they need in order to be a Dark Skies community.
Let's talk about costs, because I'm super curious if there's a difference between a bulb that is 4,000 Kelvin or 3,000 Kelvin.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the 4,000 Kelvin, the 3,000 Kelvin, and even a 2,700 Kelvin are all the same cost. So there's not a cost difference in the bulb. One of the things that could be a cost addition for the Dark Skies Initiative would be adding shielding. So one of the aspects to, and this again is not my area of expertise, but from what I understand from the Dark Skies group, is that shielding sometimes makes a difference or sometimes is necessary in order to get that qualification. And the shielding adds about $12 per fixture, so it's not a lot. The key to shielding is that it needs to be installed at the time that we change the lights so that we don't have double the labor costs associated with going up there, changing the light, and then going back up and putting shielding on it. So the only additional cost really appears to be shielding at this time.
And does the town take that extra cost on?
Yes, the town would be taking that cost on. And the way that we've done our LED transition for all of our communities is that, you know, we own the lights and we've said if you would like to switch to LEDs and be paying a lower rate for those LEDs because it's a lower rate than our high pressure sodium bulbs, that they can purchase the lights and we'll install them for free. So charge no labor associated with installing them. And most of our communities have, like I said, everybody except for Montrose and Paonia have taken that on, and the communities have paid the price of buying those LEDs and then we've installed them for free.
I recently heard that the city of Montrose is due for a lighting upgrade. What are the chances that Montrose would be considered for 3000 Kelvin?
We've talked to Montrose a number of times, again, from the standpoint of energy efficiency, not so much the Dark Skies Initiative. And, you know, every time that we've talked to them, they haven't quite been ready to make that leap and go on and make the transition to LEDs. They have not approached us with any plans or anything as far as Dark Skies is concerned at this time.
Would it be the same case?
Would we offer them the same program? I think we would. I mean, that's what we're trying to decide. You know, it is a deviation from our standard. The problem with deviating from the standard, I hate to sound, you know, like we're being difficult, but we tried to standardize on one type of bulb so that no matter what, we stock one bulb, the guys carry one type of bulb on their trucks to make changeouts. When you start having lots of different types of bulbs, then you show up at a site, you go to put the bulb up, and oh, this is a 3000 and the others are 4000, and everybody's going to complain about the color difference because they look different. You know, they look brighter or they look more yellow, more blue based on the color difference. So we try to standardize so that no matter which crew's going out, no matter where the light is, they just go and put in this one bulb. So standardization helps us as far as inventory, warehousing, and our crew's ability to make changes. You know, us deviating from that and going to the 3000 has been a decision. It's been, I wouldn't say a huge decision, but it has taken some, thought as to how we're going to deal with that. Are we going to inventory it? And right now what we've offered the town of Paonia is that we won't inventory it. Whenever they need them changed, we'll purchase some specifically for them, and then we'd go install it. So if it starts to become something that we have to do throughout our service territory, we'd probably ultimately transition and standardize on a different Kelvin.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know how many city lights in Paonia would be replaced?
Yes, there are 102 tariffed lights in Paonia. So those are lights that DMEA owns and that we then charge a tariff rate for the usage of that light. So 102 in Paonia.
Do you know how many there are in Montrose?
Several thousand.
Does the lower Kelvin affect the cost of electricity?
No, it doesn't. It's about the same for any of those. Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that I've seen come up just from the International Dark Sky website and brochures is this idea that communities would be concerned with lower lighting being more dangerous or that there would be more crime. Do you have any information or statistics about outdoor lighting affecting crime and safety in cities and communities?
I don't, but I can say that that is one of the things that we look at when we choose street lighting, is whether or not there's a sufficient light to illuminate the area for, you know, not just safety for crime, but also safety for pedestrians, safety for vehicles. You know, people are driving at night, seeing a person crossing the street, it is a big deal. And so that is a reason that we standardized on the bulb that we standardized on. You know, whether or not these would make a significant difference, that's why we've put them up in the town to let the town make that decision. Ultimately, that decision is at the town's discretion as far as the safety of the community and things like that are concerned. But if it did get to a point that we were being asked to put in something that seemed completely unsafe, obviously we wouldn't do that because we do have concern for the communities that we serve.
We just heard from DMEA's Chief Operating Officer, Virginia Harmon. Next, we'll hear from Brian Cashin, president of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. Here's Brian talking about astrotourism and how to find out about events coming up in 2020.
One of my primary interests in dark skies is to show the night sky to the general public, but I think it's important for people to realize the dark skies are important for many, many other reasons besides making astronomers happy. There are health impacts related to light pollution. There are wildlife impacts across most species, but particularly insects and birds. A lot of discussion about the safety associated with lights. And one of the primary things that we're learning about many lights, but particularly the early generations of LED lights, is that they generate a lot of glare. And in fact, this has some negative safety impacts that we're just beginning to learn about.
Describe the glare. What is that?
Well, you can imagine if you're driving or walking down the street and there's a very bright light, whether it happens to be an LED or high-pressure sodium or whatever, that shines in your eyes, it's very difficult to see what's going on around you. And so you are less aware of other vehicles or other people or any of the other things that might be occurring because of the glare from that light. Many times it's just because the light happens to be oriented the wrong way. And a little bit of work with resources like the International Dark Sky Association or other lighting companies that deal with lights can help mitigate the glare from lights as well as some of the other negative impacts of light.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really want to mention has to do with what we would call astrotourism. This is people that come to places that have dark skies specifically to see the night sky. And of course, what everybody asks about is the Milky Way. My friends up at the Black Canyon National Park say that they get two questions when somebody walks into the visitor center. Where is the restroom? And where can I see the Milky Way? And for the past number of years, astrotourism has been the fastest growing program at the Western National Parks in the United States. What that means is that more people are coming to national parks and to state parks and to other places that are dark skies because that's what they want to see is dark skies. They want to be able to see the Milky Way. And if they've come from any major city or even a city like Denver, they probably haven't seen the night sky in years. And so this is what we offer to them.
How many visitors have you had this last year?
Well, we keep track of the number of contacts that we make. And for the past several years, it has been between 2,000 and 3,000 people per year that come to our various outreach events. And almost all of those are people that we meet up at the Black Canyon. We do outreach events there from late May to late September, Wednesdays and Fridays when the moon isn't full. And then the National Park even does moonwalks on those nights when the moon is bright, and then they just change the focus of the walks and of the interpretation that they're giving to the park.
And what's the website where people can check out upcoming events?
As far as the Black Canyon National Park, it would be nps.gov/BLCA. For our club, the site is blackcanyonastronomy.com, and one of the menu bar items there would be calendar of events. And if they just click that, they'll get a list of the topics that we've got. My hope would be that over time, that this particular interest on the part of the general public becomes long-term and perhaps even embedded in our culture and our society so that the, you know, the wonder of the night sky becomes just sort of something that we're always seeking and always looking for and always trying to protect. And of course, that's what a lot of this other things we've talked about have been related to is the protection of the night sky. So if you want to protect the night sky in your neighborhood, just turn out the lights.
That was Brian Cashin, president of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. Next, we'll hear from Nancy McGuire, president of the Western Colorado Astronomy Club. I met Nancy at the Grand Mesa Observatory in Whitewater, Colorado. And I asked Nancy why protecting the night sky is so important to her and her club.
Well, Western Colorado, as you know, is an amazing natural area. We have an amazing number of natural resources, such as the Colorado National Monument and other tourist destinations. But what people may or may not realize is that the night sky out here is just as much of a natural resource, what's up in the sky, as all of these wonderful things that are down here on the ground. More and more people are doing astrotourism or just doing it as a hobby, not just generally, but also for special events like eclipses and meteor showers. The public is very aware of them, and they truly enjoy witnessing these natural events.
Talk to me about some of the challenges.
I think the biggest challenge is, I would say, lack of awareness. As the reason we as astronomers initiate things like this is because we are very aware of it. But I think that a lot of educators and the general public are just not thinking about the issue of light pollution. It has become so much a part of daily life that it's the new normal. People don't stop to think about it anymore as what it is, which is light pollution and nuisance lighting. And it's taking away a natural legacy that everybody should be entitled to.
Yeah. What's one thing you think everybody should see in the night sky?
I think that, of course, the Milky Way is always the biggest thing, because a lot of people look up into the night sky and they see a lingering cloud up there, and they do not realize that it is actually an arm of the galaxy that we live in, which is the Milky Way. And people, when they see it, are quite astonished. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, with the naked eye, under dark skies, you can also see a little smudge in the sky, which is the Andromeda Galaxy, which is a completely distant galaxy from us. And it's amazing that you can just look up and see it there in the night sky.
When you have events up here at the Grand Mesa Observatory, what's the most rewarding part for you?
The wow factor at the eyepiece. A lot of people that come here, again, they look up, they see the Milky Way, that's great. But when they look in the eyepiece, especially at the planet Jupiter or the planet Saturn, it's an amazing feeling because you feel like you've actually flown out into outer space and are hovering out there looking at this with your naked eye. And everybody from young children all the way up to whatever age, the wow factor gets everyone.
That was Nancy McGuire, president of the Western Colorado Astronomy Club. Now we'll hear from Terry Hancock, director of the Grand Mesa Observatory. Terry showed me around the observatory and talked with me about some of the telescopes that they have on site and the overall mission of the Grand Mesa Observatory.
The idea of having Grand Mesa Observatory here is to do public outreach and gather interest by the educational community by having equipment that can be remotely controlled for science and research. I don't know if you noticed, but on the way in here, there's a big white dome at the entrance to the observatory. That is actually one of 12 telescopes that are owned by the Air Force, part of the Falcon Telescope Network. There are only 12 of them in the world, and we're honored to have one of them here. One of the reasons why they chose Grand Mesa Observatory is because we have pretty good night sky. You know, we have a good elevation here. We're just over 6,000 feet, and the climate is good. We have great weather conditions normally, and light pollution is minimal, although it's a concern to me. It's getting worse by the years, you know. As we're seeing more people populate into the remoter areas, we're seeing more light pollution. And, I'm really hoping that we can do our bit as far as, you know, trying to educate people to put the right sort of light fittings up.
That was Terry Hancock, director of the Grand Mesa Observatory. Now we'll hear from Sonia Kendall, who recently moved to Grand Junction from Salt Lake City. I asked Sonia if she notices light pollution in Grand Junction.
Coming from Salt Lake City, no. It's gorgeous here and you can see the sky. But coming from the small town in Minnesota, it's still worse than there. Looking at the sky is like major memories for me, and you can't always go out and see a super clear sky. So I actually joked with my husband this weekend because we decided not to put up Christmas lights, but I did make a joke saying, well, look, we'll fix the light pollution. I'm all for it, absolutely. Wouldn't it save money anyway? Like, I'll turn off my lights all day.
That was Grand Junction resident Sonia Kendall. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVMF. I'm Corey Stanton. We've been talking about dark skies and light pollution. And after all of my research and interviews, I'm left wondering if all of the communities in Western Colorado could come together, could we really become a designated dark sky region? Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year.